Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, we made it through the weekend. Comrade Kumquat didn't start World War III or incite another clan rally. And apparently, we made it through the eclipse. Yay! Yes. It is Monday, the 21st day of August, 2017. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. This is where we live. That's where you go, headonradionetwork.com. If you would like to pop into the chat room and be joined by the merry band gathering there even as we speak, already in the room, Anatole, Laborman, VT Blom, as am I. And take yourself out a screen name. Let's select a password, and you'll be part of the madcap, merry, zany, wacky, real time, online extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. We look forward to your participation. Let's see, it's More and Monday, and oh golly. I meant to check earlier, but it got away from me. I don't know when the next Moran Monday eclipse will occur. I mean, you want to talk about a rarity. But we had one of those. Yep. Thanks for letting me know early, Scott and Punky. Audio great via Head On site and on White Rose. Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to have that one little thing not driving me batty. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Stream is hot. Yay. Okay. So let's hope it stays that way. Wouldn't that be lovely? Yes, it would. It would. And as we get started, there are thanks to go out. We ended the week on a deficit. But that got cleared up over the course of the weekend, thanks to our subscribers. Thank you to Joan, and thank you to our buddies at Shadow Mountain Graphics. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to Stephen in Ohio. Thank you very kindly have to go down through here. I want to make sure everybody gets thanked. Thank you to Darlene. And thank you to our brand new subscriber, Robert. Thank you, Robert, for jumping in. And thank you to Glenn Cairn. And thank you to Frank. Because of all of you. Oh, wait, did I miss some? Yes, I did. Thank you to Kenda. And Joseph.
Thank you to Tosh. And thank you to David in Ohio. This program brought to you by... The entire program, every night, is, of course, brought to you by listeners and subscribers. And thanks to them, we cleared out that ugly little deficit so we don't have to, you know, do the reverb thing and yell for Lassie from down in the bottom of the fundraising hole. That's always a good thing. So we're just at $200 this evening. And you see the difference that subscribers make. So another general reminder. Now, this doesn't go out to anybody who's already subscribing or anything like that. If you're happy where you are, stay where you are. If you don't subscribe, though, and this is part of an overall push that I hope maybe will reach completion by, how about the Horn's anniversary? The Horn will be, in its present incarnation, 12 years old. The 12th anniversary of the Horn is coming up on October the 24th. Okay, just two months and 3 days from now. And wouldn't it be wonderful to have lots and lots and lots of new subscribers by then so that fundraising mentions like this that get in the way of the front end of the program can kind of disappear. You almost certainly disappear. It would be wonderful, wouldn't it? Well, the Patreon campaign is going on, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. And for people who don't like PayPal, that's a great way of subscribing. If you like PayPal, you can just click on contribute and check the little box. And now your PayPal subscription will come out on the same day, the day that you make it, the day that you set it up, every month. If you go with Patreon, it'll come out the first day of the month. And I'm working on other premiums and working on other ways of saying thank you. I try to make sure that everybody gets thanked on air because this beats the hell out of having to tell you about the latest in buy gold now schemes, okay? Even if we had the ability to go out and get that kind of advertising, which we don't. Or pitching herbal hair regrowth capsules or any of that foolishness. So if you jump in on the Patreon subscription thing right now, you won't get billed for another 10 days, which is cool. And in terms of thinking about, when we talk about $10 a month, you know, nobody's going to charge you that. It's just that the whole program goes out for free. If I'm ever independently wealthy, there will be no more, you know, but I don't know how that's going to happen, short of the lottery or something like that. Or somebody just walking up to the front porch with a, they're pulling in a big black limousine with Mr. Soros in the back saying, Bob, it's time we funded the Horn community. Short of that, I don't know. But by October the 24th, it would be great if we could, we're like 300 and we're at, I think 62 or 75 or something like that. That's where our subscription base is right now. If we could get it down to where, we had 100, that would take a big bite out of it, a quarter of the bite. But in terms of thinking about what it means, and I'm sorry for going on like this, but just kind of gotta, look at it. Agnes asked me to go down to the Rippy Mart the other night. Frankly, she wanted a Hershey bar. So I went down and I got a Hershey bar. And you know how you can break it up into little chunks and stuff like that. Well, I paid, I got out, and then I took to thinking about it. What I just, and I think it was a buck and a half. So, literally, one program, 3 hours, this program, 3 hours of this program, if you subscribe at $10 a month, 3 hours, one program, will wind up costing you, let's see, yeah, one third of that Hershey bar. Really? Not even a half a Hershey bar. A whole Hershey bar will cost you is 3 days of this program. How about that? It's astonishing, isn't it? That's what a bargain this program is. So we need to raise $200 tonight. However that can happen, wonderful. One at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 1/4, 64 at $3.13. And yes, we will round up that half a penny from 12 1/2 to 13. And we will take that half of a penny. And we will, we absolutely will put it into the oil change for the Maybach here at the fabulous, fabulous Horn Mansion compound. So it's all there at headonradionetwork.com. The tab contribute, unless you want to do the Patreon thing, and that's at patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. Here at the end of the month, I'll start sending out the first round of bumper stickers, one way or the other. And we'll be on our way. And then at the end of every further month, I'll send out more bumper stickers that are kindly provided to us by our buddy Scott in Sweden, who is somewhere in today in East Tennessee for some eclipse viewing. And I hope your eclipse viewing went well. Agnes and I were busy sitting here producing Dr. Bill, but we did go out into the yard, and it didn't get dark enough for the crickets to start chirping or the roosters to crow, but the light changed. And I won't say eerie, but it was an interesting change in the light. And it was beautiful in its own way. I cheated. I used the camera on my phone to get a look at it. There were no eclipse glasses they never were around here in the first place because it wasn't a big deal. But for those of you who traveled to see the totality, you saw something special. And maybe we'll get to see it again in 7 years. I was particularly touched by something that happened, with the one back in the 20th century. That's one of those things you never think you were going to wind up saying, back in the 20th century. We don't think that way very often. But Frank Reynolds, who was a great anchor back in the days before cable news, it was 1979 the last time a total solar eclipse passed over the United States. And That's when Frank Reynolds said this.
Total eclipse of the sun, visible today over North America for the last time in this century. This is an ABC News special. Live coverage of the solar eclipse. Now from New York, here is correspondent Frank Reynolds.
Good morning. This is indeed a special events broadcast of a genuine special event.
See, that's what news broadcasting sounded like, boys and girls, back before it got turned into the 24-hour news cycle. You know, Ted Turner meant well, but I don't think he quite realized what a vicious thing he unleashed when he pried the lid off of that box. No. Frank Reynolds had handled science correspondent duties as well as some anchoring duties for ABC. And he was in fact, a dandy. And when all was said and done, as the eclipse waned, well, this.
So that's it, the last solar eclipse to be seen on this continent in this century. And as I said, not until August 21st, 2017, will another eclipse be visible from North America. That's 38 years from now. May the shadow of the moon fall on a world at peace. And ABC News, of course, will bring you a complete report on that next eclipse, 38 years from now. I want to thank everybody involved in this magnificent undertaking. It's been just great. We've had a lot of fun. This is Frank Reynolds in New York, and we'll have a complete report on the world news tonight.
By the way, that entire clip is 10 minutes. Yeah, you want a good comparison between news then and news now? They managed to handle the solar eclipse in a 10-minute segment. It's been going on for days now because, of course, there's a lot of soap that you have to sell. And, well, depending on what channel you watch, there's that lady who walks into the middle of Times Square and sits down on a chaise lounge and starts texting her psychiatrist because she's so glad she found a psychiatrist to text to for only $35 a week as she sits on a chaise lounge in the middle of Times Square. Or you know, that girl who vomits milk into the sink because her credit history is out of date, or any number of stupid, you know, idiotic bullshit that we have to put up with. Right. But it was pretty spectacular, wasn't it? Oh, no, Carol, I didn't want eclipse glasses. I had no need of them. We weren't in the totality path, so it really wouldn't have made much difference. But thank you, because you are, after all, Carol Baker, a giver. Carol says, I had some very confused eagles and hawks. Yeah, it never got anywhere near that dark here. Beautiful pictures from Lake Hooterville. But that line from Frank Reynolds, may the shadow of the moon fall on a world at peace. I guess we kind of missed that one, and we'll find out what in another 2 hours and 42 minutes, how many more years the moon shadow won't be falling on a world at peace. I mean, I'm guessing we can't even say that about 2024, can we? No, because we get a big speech, the best speech, only the best speech, later tonight on why it's going to be necessary to send 3,600 more American military personnel into the meat grinder, over there in the graveyard of empires, namely, to wit, Afghanistan. Oh, but we can't leave, can we? No, we're stuck to it, and it's stuck to us. Almost like trying to juggle a big ball of mucilage or glue or something. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, out in Arizona, the Jefferson Davis Memorial in Arizona got tarred and feathered. Don't know if you caught that, but that occasioned a couple of questions on my part. Why in the is there any sort of Confederate monument in, you know, Arizona, which became a state, we might recall, in 1912? And I guess some people, like, well, let's see, the Confederate traitor, who was a well-regarded military officer, Albert Sidney Johnston, left a post in California and rode back east to turn his back on his country. He wound up getting shot and bled to death in his boot by an old oak tree or some such. at a battlefield known variously as either Pittsburgh Landing or Shiloh. But, a Confederate memorial in Arizona. And, of course, the booger eaters are outraged. This is state property. This is public property. We've got no respect for the rights of people. Respect for the public property of public memorials to slavery and racism and treason. God damn it. Seems to me the memorial got the treatment that the man should have received. Yeah. But anyway, beside the point. No. The moon's shadow did not fall, Frank Reynolds, on a world at peace. We were probably arguably more at peace in 1979. Not even arguably. We were. The United States was more at peace in 1979 than we are now, by a long shot. So I presume that by now you have all seen the photographs of Geezer Disgustus watching the eclipse. No, really, he did. Dumb bastard walked out onto the balcony there at the White House with melanoma and little boron. They, you know, and at one point he put his eclipse glasses on, but you know how vain he is. And God knows it made him look even creepier and crazier than he already is. So instead he put that big stupid face on and looked at the eclipse. But that's okay, he can do that. Because if you're Donald Trump, you don't have to be worried about having your retinas fried by looking at an eclipse. Because after all, being Donald Trump, he's already blinded by his own hate and rage and stupidity and vanity and venality and all the other character flaws that come together in a big toxic bundle that we recognize as Donnie John Trump. So, yeah. What else for this Moran Monday? Oh, we have Morans. We do. Fortunately, the madness that because it's a major foreign policy speech, a major speech, because he and he's pissed off, he's back from his vacation. He came back from his vacation in a lot less good spirits than I did from ours. I don't know. I'd hate to suggest that sick freak go to the Gulf of Mexico, but it worked for me and worked for Agnes. 17 days would have been nice. But then again, the entire Horn family would have disappeared by then. It really does bother me that we're going to get an explanation for why we have to throw more blood and treasure down the Afghan rat hole this evening. Because remember how when he campaigned, it's just another goddamn lie. Remember when he campaigned and he said that it was stupid to go into Iraq and that we needed to be smart about our... Well, right. No. We're gonna be there until we figure out a way to mine the rare earth elements and bring capitalism to the clamoring masses in Afghanistan. They only think they got it bad now. Wait till the resource curse kicks in. More on that in a minute. But I want to take a minute now. You are probably familiar by now with, and I think we talked about it last week, toward the end of the week. Tony Schwartz ghost wrote The Art of the Deal for Trump. And he made the mistake of suggesting that Trump, that based on his knowledge of Trump, he thinks that Trump will soon resign from the presidency. Now, it matters not that I disagree. With Mr. Schwartz, I don't think Donald Trump will resign. I don't think he'll be impeached. I don't think he will be removed from office under the 25th Amendment. I think if he put on a clown suit and went out into the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue and started mowing down tourists and stomping the occasional kitty and puppy, I don't think this Congress would do a damn thing about it. Because, well, they're kind of happy where they are right now. I mean, granted, they'd still like to give a great big tax cut to the rich. They're running ads now, one of these godforsaken dark money groups, about how we need tax reform. Really? Because I haven't seen any billionaire hedge fund managers with their noses pressed up against the window panes staring in at the poors while they eat their, if they've got them, rice and beans. And sure, the Congress would love to have taken health care away from 10 or 20 or 30 million people. But they might take another stab at that yet. And sure, they'd like to have an infrastructure bill where they could sell off the public infrastructure so that every 15 feet on an interstate highway was a goddamn toll. But things are going pretty swimmingly for them. More on that in a minute. So I don't see any, and then there's the general spineless cowardice of the Republican Party. Bob Corker in Tennessee, who's up for re-election and would not lose that Senate seat to a Democrat if the Democrat was Jesus H. Christ himself. Well, Bob Corker said that Trump was, what were the exact words, that he had failed to display the capability of having a successful presidency. Oh, and by the way, tomorrow, according to Carol Baker just shared with me, the cover of the New York Daily News will be... Dolt 45 staring at the eclipse. The big bold headline will be "Not Too Bright." Carol observing, you know, the sun never dimmed when Obama was president. Just saying. True. Okay. Ron and Raleigh with an observation. Hey, Bob, 17 days in a Nissan Sentra. Wouldn't that be overkill? Yeah, I think it was 17 days. I would have, figured out something else. Maybe I would have sprung for the Ford Fusion. No, that wouldn't have been much of an improvement. But anyway, Tony Schwartz got some grief for saying that the president would resign. I disagree with him. Even Bob Corker, who was hailed as some sort of brave, bold Republican for saying that Donald Trump lacks the capability to be president. Oh, shit fire. I think most of us knew that when he announced he was running now, didn't we? Yeah, we did. And, well, see, Paul Ryan, you know, Eddie Munster, tried to ride the back of Heather Heyer's mom earlier today, citing her in a statement allegedly rebuking neo-Nazis and Klansmen. He said he was, quote, in the statement, he said he was struck by the tone Heather Heyer's parents took at her memorial service, that their call for healing and forgiveness was a powerful example. The only problem was she didn't do that. No. Susan Bro said, we're not going to sit around and shake hands and go kumbaya, and I'm sorry, it's not all about forgiveness. I know it's not a popular trend, but the truth is we're going to have our differences. We're going to be angry with each other, but let's channel the anger not into hate, not into violence, not into fear, but let's channel that difference, that anger, into righteous action. Yeah, Paul Ryan missed that part. He also, in his statement, failed to mention Donald Trump by name. Just like Bob Corker failed to suggest that despite the fact that he lacks the capability to be president, he hasn't been removed yet and should be. Huh? See, there's a difference. As long as you, as long as these Republicans don't call for his removal from office, it's all just whistling past graveyards as far as I'm concerned. 32 minutes into the program, I don't think I did the Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Moran Monday. Paul Ryan, Moran. Bob Corker, Moran. But here's the most interesting part of it all. Tony Schwartz, after he said he thought Trump would resign, well, he got a voicemail, an anonymous voicemail from a Trumpanzee.
This is for Tony Schwartz. I read his little article on the Yahoo about how Trump is going to resign in a couple of months. Well, let me tell you something.
Yeah, because she's so smart. His little article. Right. You get an idea of what the tenor of this will be, but yeah.
I read his little article on the Yahoo about how Trump is going to resign in
the
a
Yahoo.
Couple of months. Well, let me tell you something. Trump would never resign. You see, some people, they mature from 1987, and they grow up and become men, not transvestites, okay? So.
Huh? 1987, what? Okay, so that's when The Art of the Deal was published. I don't think Tony Schwartz is a transvestite. The only one I can think of that Donald Trump runs around with who's turned out to be a guy in a dress is, you know, Rudy Giuliani. Puzzlement.
Trump, he's probably laughing when he read your article because we know why you don't like him. All you CEOs think that you're going to, all we did was bail you out. Obama funneled money to you. You stole it from the American people. You wrote yourself a check. You stole everything, gave it away to everybody, and used the United States of America like a parasite to fund your own agenda. Well, that's not happening anymore.
Can I call time out just because of the accent of the caller here? I know. When I played this the first time, I thought, well, I know what this is going to sound like. Because I was expecting an accent more in tune with more in tune with you know, somebody behind the cornpone curtain, south of the Mason-Dixie line. Because of my own, look, I admit it, because of my own prejudices. Absolutely. But no, I somehow don't think I don't think our voicemail correspondent here is from Busted Knuckle, Arkansas, or anything.
We will never leave him for anything in this world. Do you understand? All Obama gave us is Ebola on American soil. He disappeared in the greatest oil spill in American history, which I think he caused intentionally.
What, Edith, huh?
All Obama brought us was Ebola on American soil. Yes, yes, Barack Obama. Barack Obama personally set off the Ebola epidemic of a couple of years past, and then made sure it made it to America, where there was another Ebola epidemic. Only there wasn't. Is she confusing Ebola and E. coli? Because we have had some E. coli problems here in America. That usually happens in corporate food processing plants, where they mix the poop with the actual human food, but because, you know, things come in contact with, you know, like meat coming in contact with, you know, cow poop and things like that. Behold, ecce femina, okay? Ecce femina trumpenensa. Behold the Trumpansy woman. And then, and I'm open, I'm wanting a little help here. What's that part about Barack Obama disappearing into an oil spill? Is that some sort of racist joke that I don't get? I'm lost. Need a little help. Because I don't. Scott pointing out, she sounds like she's either from Philly or Delaware. Kind of hard to say. Well, but we're, oh, yeah, it goes on. I'm just glad she's not swearing at him yet.
He gave us transvestites that we look like a national freak show out of a sideshow of a circus.
Yeah, Obama gave us transvestites. Because did you know that up until January the 20th, 2009, there was not one single transvestite, not one single trans woman, not one single cross-dresser? I mean, okay, so, like, there was Milton Berle back in the 50s, but he didn't count because that was theater. I mean, that was like slapstick comedy or something. He wasn't really one of them. I mean, just, you know, the Milton Berle jokes. Not a single transvestite in the entire United States until Barack Obama brought them to us.
500,000 people slaughtered in Syria, immigrants all over the place, all terrorists running all over everywhere you could imagine.
Yeah, terrorists running around all everywhere you could imagine. It makes it downright difficult to get into the Rippy Mart when Agnes wants one of those Hershey bars. You gotta wade through a few ISIS fighters and God Almighty, it's terrible. And there's terrorists all over the Wally World and the Kroger they're even at the cash registers now. Well, okay, see, that's the problem. There probably are that many terrorists in the United States. It's just that they happen to have, like, Confederate flag decals on their rusting-out pickup trucks and heritage, not hate signs. But I don't think that's who she was talking about.
Well, because of him, 7,000 military personnel gave their life to give up Iraq from that other idiot, George Bush, who...
She's an equal opportunity hater, that other idiot, George Bush. Okay. There's a little clarity. Carol Baker pointing out. I believe she's referring to the Deepwater Horizon. Yeah, because that's probably too much for her to say. But Carol says, you know, Obama personally gave me tennis elbowlie. First cowbell of the evening. For, you know, tennis elbowlie. Did I mention it's Moran Monday? Yeah, and you just know, you just know that Marveline here went out and told all of her neighbors, I just called that Tony Schwartz because he doesn't know nothing about Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is a great American who will never, ever, ever resign.
Told us there was chemical weapons, and he gave everything, took us home, and gave it all to ISIS. And now you want to talk about Donald Trump? We are so grateful for Donald Trump if anybody, including you or those fucking communists up there for 500 CEOs, I mean, Congress and senators who...
Wait. This may be one of the greatest Moran Monday recordings of all time. It took her 1 minute and 48 seconds to drop her first F-bomb here. And the Congress is comprised of 500 effing CEOs. I wonder, where does somebody like this get their information? Because if you were an intrepid enough researcher, you could probably figure it out. I mean, she sounds... Rush Limbaugh is way too sophisticated for her. Alex Jones may be above her level. Where are there stories about Barack Obama bringing all the transvestites to the United States? Well, just remember, one of the marvels of the 2016 election cycle was the ability to use extremely granular location and voter data to almost individually target people. And she got targeted.
You are guilty of treason. Touches one fucking hair on his head. You better know where to go, because the military's going to go in there and arrest you for treason. We'll make citizens arrest. We'll come up there and make citizens arrest and put you all in jail where you belong.
Yeah, put you all in jail where you belong. Hey, look, I'm dancing. She was the daughter of Rosie O'Grady, a regular old-fashioned girl. Okay, we'll get this sussed out and sorted out together. Carol Baker pointing out, she blamed the black guy for the deregulation of his predecessor. Bitch voted for the free fucking market. She got it. Okay, further vocal analysis coming from Steve in New York. She's from Queens. And I was going to say, I thought she sounded a little Queensy. Maybe we're not that far from the, you know... from Hauser Street there where the bunkers lived. Keeping up with fact-checking the freak, Scott points out there are 535 members of the House and Senate, lady. Maybe she meant Fortune 500 CEOs.
You're all a bunch of corrupt old hags. That's just what you are. Half of you belong in hospice, half of you belong in jail. You are disgusting. We loathe you. Mitt Romney, he gave up. He took a dive for Barack Obama. You think we don't know that? So that Barack Obama could be this big one to do all the globalism? We don't need global. In fact, we don't need you. We don't need any of your companies. We'll start from scratch. All of you should be in jail. Jamie.
Yeah, she's going to start from scratch. We're going to have from scratch airlines. Her phone company is going to be from scratch. Her food is going to be from scratch. Even though she probably couldn't grow a goddamn cucumber if her life depended on it. Jesus, these people.
Diamond, everybody, you took all the money, you corrupted the system, and don't think that we don't know that George Bush was set up and that was intentional by Barack Obama. And don't forget Mr. Soros.
She's a walking compendium of ignorant, ill-informed right-wing grievance. Barack Obama set up George Bush by making the economy fail while George Bush was still president. Because he's got that Kenyan Muslim usurper wizard power. Yeah, over there in Marvelline's house, the Fox News and the Alex Jones and the Limbaugh and the Savage, it all just goes 24/7. Awake, asleep, there's no difference, and eventually it gets, well, you get a booger eater gumbo like this.
John Kasich, all the usuals. Mitch McConnell is so corrupt that I don't even know how he looks at himself in the mirror. So don't give us no goddamn lecture about what Trump is going to do. He'll never leave his country. He'll never betray his country. He'll never leave the American people. And
he's already betrayed his country. He's already broken the law. He's already violated the Constitution. This is one of those people who didn't need the eclipse glasses today. She's already blinded by her own hate and ignorance. All right, it's now a competition. Good Todd down in South Carolina stands saying, Bob, that woman is most definitely South Philly. I'm talking Snyder Avenue, Melrose Diner crowd. Now, that's granular.
We'll never leave him. So you got that straight? And if we didn't want to leave, then we're forever grateful for him for giving up everything he had, a good life, and putting it on the line. Not even taking his salary, okay? For
Jesus Christ. They've got him believed that he's serving as president for free. This is an anthropological moment, okay? With the speech that's coming up in a couple of hours, this is actually kind of important. Apparently another captain of another destroyer does not know how to sail a ship without running into merchant seamen. Yes, I understand that. Yes, there's other news out there. But this is National Geographic stuff. This is Jane Goodall stuff, okay? This is a voluntary... This isn't a joke. This isn't a bit. You can't write this. If somebody wrote this for Stephen Colbert or Seth Meyers or John Oliver or Trevor Noah, they wouldn't have a job anymore. Because even in the mind of comic writers, this is too far gone. This is over the top. If you want to know what's wrong with America, the fact that that America is apparently comprised of about 30% her, well, you should be well on your way to understanding where we are. I don't know if our buddy Reverbo the Human Boy is listening tonight, but if he is, he's probably barking at the speaker. This goes back to something he said years and years and years ago. Namely, that we have sat around idling the bus waiting for people like this lady to get on and go into the future with us. And at some point in time, we're just going to have to slam the door and go. Because we can't wait anymore. But the problem is, we can't slam the door and go because people like her are running around slashing the tires and pulling the valve stems.
Yeah, Carol Baker points out, by the way, never mind that the goddamn Secret Service is broke. You saw that, right? $66,000 in fucking golf cart fees that went to the asshole she thinks is working for free. No, in August, in 7 months of being president, Donald Trump has shot through the Secret Service's budget for presidential protection because he can't be bothered to go to goddamn work and instead has to run off and ride in a golf cart around his own golf courses because he really doesn't like being president, but now he can't quit. But yeah, he's working for free. 4 months left of the year, and the Secret Service can no longer pay agents who've already worked hundreds of hours to protect these reprobates, what I call the Hell's Kitchen hillbillies. Yeah, they work for no money, the Trumps do. Bullshit, he said to Robin, and he turned and walked away.
Trying to save his country. There is such a thing as called love of country. All right, and nobody, here's another little thing for you. There's nobody in this world that's going to come on American soil and take down American history. Not as long as we have a breath left in our body.
American history. Not Confederate history. Take down American history. This damn fool thinks that history is embodied in statues. Well, while I was gone, just as a matter of curiosity, when we were across the river at my friend's memorial service, when we left, we drove around that side of the river a little bit. And we drove by the Colbert County, Alabama courthouse, named for George Colbert, the half Scots, half Chickasaw slave owner that I talked about a few nights ago. And on the lawn of the Colbert County courthouse is a statue, much like statues on the courthouse lawns of various county seats all over the South. It depicts a heroic Confederate soldier standing there in pants and a waist-length jacket or shirt with a slouch hat and a bedroll slung over his shoulder, holding a musket with the butt on the ground and holding it by the muzzle. The inscription on one side of the base, there is a flag. Interestingly, it's not a Confederate flag. It's just a generic sculpture of a white flag. How about that? And that part says CSA 1861 to 1865. The inscription facing the road says, "A tribute to the Confederate soldiers of Colbert County by the Tuscumbia chapter, United Daughters of the Confederacy." And then there's a date. 1911. 50 years. Full 50 years. Since the South committed that act of treason and attacked the North. By the time this statue was erected, even the Confederate soldiers who returned home, the youngest of them would have been 64 if he marched away in at the age of 14. Most of them were long since dead. And yet in 1911, the United Daughters of the Confederacy felt like they had to put up a monument on the courthouse lawn of Colbert County and many other courthouse lawns just like it. Almost sounds like it was a coordinated effort, doesn't it? Because it was. Well, Bob, they were just commemorating the 50th anniversary. Okay, why didn't it go up at the 25th anniversary when they could have... Well, because by 1911, the full suppression of the civil rights of freed blacks was well underway. And it got well underway in the immediate aftermath of the Supreme Court decision in Plessy versus Ferguson. Up until that time, there had been challenges here and there. But in Plessy versus Ferguson, the Supreme Court of the United States said, absolutely separate but equals a great idea. You can do it wherever you want to. Let the segregation roll. And like poison ivy springing up all over the dank and humid South, these statues began appearing on courthouse lawns. That's the history that this woman won't allow to be taken down. Barkway in the chat room says, I grew up south of Philly in northern Delaware. I'm there visiting now for my mom's funeral. Our condolences, Barkway. This woman is definitely South Philly. She has that Philadelphia O. You know, I said a couple of weeks ago, I got no Philly accent. I got no game in the Philly accent, so I'm relying on y'all. This is also borne out by something Scott pointed out. She mentions coming up there to effect a citizen's arrest upon Schwartz, who's presumably in New York City. So I'm concluding from that and her accent, she's from somewhere south of New York City, most likely Philly. Those mid-Atlantic accents can be tricky. Philly, Delaware, even Balmer are all similar. Oh, and a correction. A minute ago, I mentioned that Trumps don't work for no money. And Carol pointed out, no. The Secret Service agents have capped out their salary plus overtime. The agents are working for no money. Wow, that's the way the Trumps like it. More for them. Yeah? And thank you very kindly. Thanks going out this evening. To Harold, president and CEO of the of SOCHTRAS, the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. We're down to 150 to go this evening. Harold says, please direct $25 to the last day of the month and $25 to the first day of the following month, to wit, the last shall be first and the first shall be last. Now, that's very biblical of you, Harold. So, okay, so we'll keep it at 200, and we'll do that way if it's not too, okay. Thank you, Harold. Thank you for getting us started, one way or the other. Thank you. Steve in New York describes this woman as a female Archie Bunker. God, compared to her, Archie Bunker's a bleeding heart liberal. Not to mention Alfred freaking Einstein. Yes, I said Alfred on purpose.
We've been in Vietnam. We saw that other traitor, John McCain, spill his guts and get a pardon from Nixon. And now you think you're going to come here and tell us about Donald Trump?
Howard Zinn, she's not. John McCain spilled his guts and then got a pardon from Nixon. I'm willing to I'm willing to go out on a limb and say that Nixon never had to or never pardoned or had to pardon John McCain. I mean, John McCain talked because he was tortured in the POW camp in North Vietnam. Everybody talks. There's that scene from Dr. Strangelove, which of course is fiction, but is a representation of reality. When General Ripper asks Group Captain Mandrake about when the time when he was about being captured by the Japanese in the Second World War, and he said, "Did you talk? Did you confess?" Well, Jack, actually, yes, I did. I don't think not talking was really the point of it. It was, they were just really more having a bit of fun. Damn shame. They make such bloody excellent cameras. Everybody talks. You can't not talk. Name, rank, and serial number goes only so far. You'll say anything when the torture gets bad enough. This has been proven, it used to be the law of the land, i.e. the law of the church, back during the church's heyday, Middle Ages, Inquisition, things like that. Even before the church, okay, let's be fair. In ancient Rome, a slave, which was not like a slave in the American South, a slave in ancient Rome could actually save money and buy his or her own freedom. People sometimes sold themselves into slavery so as to materially better themselves. I mean, no kidding. It really. But in ancient Rome, a slave could not give testimony in a court of law without having been tortured first, you know, to make sure that they were being truthful, because that's how their minds worked. Yeah. And there's coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. That's my question. Why is a goddamn Yankee shilling for the traitorous Confederate fucks? And to that, we have no real answer except, you know, Trumpansy.
You'll never see that day, buddy boy. You could take your energy project and go to North Korea. Go tell them how to make clean energy, okay? He'll chop you up like mincemeat and put you in a pincho. We are so sick of you CEOs, you traitors. We're sick of your congressmen. We're sick of all of you. You should all be ashamed of yourself. I don't know how. What a bunch of...
What's this about clean energy in North Korea? Like I said, this is anthropology. Do you feel like you're kind of peering through some grass at just a raving maniac in the middle of a village? The only problem is the grass you're peering through, well, the village you're peering into is the United States of America, and fully one-third of the United States of America is comprised of people like this woman. Oh, but I'm sure if you asked a member of the Sparkle Pony Brigade or somebody like that, they'd tell you that this woman is obviously suffering from terrible, terrible, terrible economic anxiety. Yeah, bullshit on that. She's a racist. She's a bigot. She's a xenophobe. And what weaponizes
the entire mix, she's dumber than dirt. But she thinks she knows so much.
Phonies, lie right to the American people. Trash your own constitution. We fed you for 100 years. We fed you. You took all your businesses and went other places. Indians running all over the place over here. We are so fed up with you.
And by Indians running all over the place around here, I don't think she's talking about the indigenous population. I think she's talking about maybe, like, you know, Mr. Patel, who runs the Dew Drop Inn down the road there, with the reasonable rates. Yeah.
We'll never leave Trump. We're the wind beneath his wings. He's a man, M-A-N, and we haven't seen one for a long time, okay? We have transvestites running around with lipstick.
Again with the transvestites, you get an idea that this is kind of that trans issues are a burr under her saddle or a bee in her bonnet, because she's looped back around to that a couple of times now.
To know what bathroom you gotta use. It looks like a goddamn freak show.
Speaking of goddamn freak shows, I don't know where she's going that she sees this freak show. Jim, our buddy Jim, is convinced that she's from Jersey, writing "No Same" all too well. Speaking of the aforementioned freak show, as we drove home a week ago yesterday, and it seems like a million years ago now, I decided that we'd pull it. I like to the extent possible, to spend as little time stopping on road trips for things like bathroom breaks and things as possible. So, like, you know, if I've got to take an exit and then I got to drive a quarter mile and then I got to park, yada, yada, yada. No. So as you get off of the Bluegrass Parkway at Versailles, yes, Versailles, not Versailles, Versailles, just like B-E-R-L-I-N is Berlin in Germany, but the new version in Wisconsin is New Berlin. The Bluegrass Parkway ends in Versailles, Kentucky, and just boom, right there, there's a Speedway convenience store. And so we pulled in there. I told Agnes, yeah, well, let's get out and stretch our legs. I'm going to go to the restroom. And so we were standing back there by the cooler, because the restrooms were back there. And there was already a dude, and it's unusual that there's guys standing in line for the restroom. Usually it's the other way around. Women's room was empty. And there's a guy standing there, and I'm waiting in line behind the guy. And whoever's in the restroom is in there for like 10 minutes. Guys are usually, and this isn't a gender, I mean, this is, no. But guys are not known for spending a lot of time in the men's room. And so, you know, Agnes goes in the ladies' room, comes out, still it's empty. She looks at the guy who's standing in front of me and says, "Want me to guard the door?" And at first he's like, no, it's okay, I can wait. Gender issues, Jesus. I mean, the plumbing is not one goddamn bit different between the two. And finally he says, okay, you know, I'd like to get back on the road. If you'll want, you know, that's cool. And so Agnes guards the door while he goes in and takes a leak and washes his hands and comes out.
wiping his hands on his pants because apparently there's no paper towel dispenser in there. It's one of those goddamned air blowers. I once saw one that had scratched into the little metal plate on it, directions for use, and everything was scratched out, and somebody had written, press on button, rub hands briskly under air, 3, wipe hands on pants, which is what it winds up being. And so he came out, and Agnes looked at me, and I said, well, you know, why not? And I walked into the ladies' room. I mean, it was clearly marked women. And, you know, no get up, no nothing, just, you know, mid-50s guy dressed for driving down the road in the middle of summer. Walked right in there, took a leak, washed my hands, cursorily moved them under the air blower and wiped my hands on my pants and left. Walking out the door, I rather loudly said, thank God there are no Christians here. They'd probably be picketing, or at least calling the police. Because in that moment, I figured out the absolute moronity of these goddamn bathroom bills. Oh, where was it? I was somewhere else. Oh, I know. It was while we were in New Orleans. First vacation in 12 years, and I'm paying attention to restrooms. It is very, very difficult to turn everything off when you leave. There was no way. I mean, the line to wait, the waiting line for Café Du Monde was, you know, hours. And I'm sorry, the beignets are wonderful, the coffee's wonderful. It's not wait in line an hour wonderful when you could be wandering around a quarter. So there was another little beignet place back up Decatur Street a little bit. And we went in there. And smack dab in the middle of the Old South are two restrooms. You know how they're marked? They say restroom. And the doorknob, when you get inside, you turn it, and it says, it turns a little red sign on the outside. It says occupied, so you don't even have to knock, because it can only be locked from the inside. And guys, women, the quarter was, Bourbon Street was so suppressed by virtue of all the construction going on there, the strippers and stuff and the drag queens who usually hang out enticing people to come into the shows, I think we saw 2 strippers, kind of forlorn, no drag queens. Well, it was Agnes's first time on Bourbon Street, and I was really hoping she could, you know, see everything that Bourbon Street has to offer. It was rather pitiful, really. Downright pedestrian. Quiet, even. Did manage to take her into the old Absinthe House bar, where she ordered a planter's punch. It is said to be a building that was owned by the Lafitte family at some point in time. Not Jean, but maybe his brother or something like that. Uncle, who knows. But I did get her to have a beverage. She has now, you know, had a walk down Bourbon Street with a drink in her hand. And when we finally got the 3 blocks in where you could finally walk in the street, like the rest of Bourbon Street's supposed to be, we were walking, and lo and behold, in the middle of the street there's some Mardi Gras beads, because Mardi Gras beads are a 365-day-a-year thing. You got to buy beads on Bourbon Street or something. But there's some Mardi Gras beads, and bless her heart, Agnes bends down as if to pick them up, and just spontaneously. I mean, this was not planned, because I don't yell at my lovely wife. But I did in that moment. What are you doing? She looks at me and said, don't pick those up! This is Bourbon Street. Those things have probably been up somebody's ass. Sorry, but... And she looked at me kind of quizzical. You don't have the camera out when you need it. But she looked at me kind of quizzical-like. And then we both had a really, really big laugh because I was something right next door to apoplectic at the time. It was almost cute. But anyway, we went to a different beignet place back up Decatur Street, had an okay cup of coffee, and had some wonderful beignets. I mean, you know, beignets are beignets. Fried little squares of dough that puff up beautifully, and they hit them with the powdered sugar, and that's pretty much what it is. But, yeah, two restrooms marked restroom. Identically provisioned in both, because Agnes went in one, I went in the other. We compared notes. And oddly enough, there was nobody, Matt Staver from Liberty Council, and it's all tax-free, hallelujah, wasn't there. Ginning up clients or anything. No. And so it was that I walked out of the ladies' room, because it was still marked women or ladies or whatever, at the Speedway in Versailles, Kentucky, and said, noticeably loud, thank God there aren't any Christians here. They would have had him and me both arrested. Because that's what they're upset about. Men in women's restrooms. When that very moment proved that there was there's absolutely nothing to the issue. And, you know, absent B-days in public restrooms, the plumbing isn't much different either. Actually, you know, hanging urinals on the wall is more of a courtesy to guys than anything else. And really, but, you know, toilet, sink, stupid forced air hand dryer. That's it. Not that I'm sharing with you any sort of abiding wisdom of the ages, but you notice these little things. But, you know, Marveline here is horrified by, you know, the transvestites in the restrooms and the horror. Carol Baker pointing out, why is she shilling for the Confederacy? She's economically anxious. Yes, that's right. That seems to do it to a girl. I can smell the oil of her tiki torch from here. Call me crazy, but I think she's got the moist loins for the Fuhrer. Moist loins. That's two, Carol. Mm-hmm. And we seem to have agreement among a number of listeners. Because, you know, you guys do this. You tell, Bob, here's your bumper. Between Carol and Ron and Raleigh and a couple of others, we've got agreement as to the bumper. And I'll probably get the same email afterward that I got the last time I played this. But anyway, I'm not gonna close out the filibobster until we get done with Marveline here, from apparently Joysey, South Philly, Delaware, or points unknown.
You destroyed this nation, and now you think you're going to take down Donald Trump? No way. There's no way. He has but to say one word. That's it. One word, we're ready. Ready and waiting.
For what? He has but to say one word. One word. What's the word? Attack? Kill? Sick 'em? No, that's two. But this is, you know, this is the Trump base. This is the more than 50% of the GOP that's alt-white. This is the clear and present danger to the Republic. This is the price we pay for failures of public education. Deliberate failures. Since, oh, around, what, 1954? Yeah.
We're waiting here, because if Nancy Pelosi don't shut her mouth, she's going to be the first one to get locked up and put in jail, along with that other communist bastard, Clinton. Oh, my God. What kind of people are you? I mean, really, I just never saw anything like, how much money do you need? How much power do you need? How much corruption can you stomach?
She's asking this, and she voted for Trump? You see why I keep saying this is like this is like an anthropology, this is like a tribal documentary. She asks how much corruption we can tolerate after mentioning Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton, when the Trump bunch are stealing everything that's not nailed down and taking a pry bar to the stuff that is. I know you don't want to believe it, because I don't want to believe it either. But this is America. You know the little Mary Sunshines, who in the wake of Charlottesville said, "Well, you know, these people are a tiny minority, and oh, gosh, look at what we accomplished in Boston this weekend." Not taken away from the people who showed up to shut down the Nazis in Boston. I'm so proud. I would have loved to have been there with you, alongside you. But the big difference in Boston, the reason they didn't get the crowd, the show-up that they wanted, was because in Boston they weren't allowed to bring their freedom protectors. Because Boston is not an open carry city, nor is Massachusetts an open carry commonwealth. The NRA has thus far failed in Massachusetts. Virginia? Well, Virginia was bring 'em if you got 'em. Outgun the police. Come on, sure, why not? That's the difference. If they could have brought their guns, there would have been a goddamn battalion of Nazis in Boston. And then it would have been entirely a different matter. I wish I was wrong. I feel quite confident that I'm not. Note coming from Robert in Australia. Communist? Why do so many Americans keep going on and on about communists? There aren't any left, except in name only. Okay, maybe Cuba, but at least they have health care for everybody. Because we're not talking about the brightest bulbs in the chandelier, Robert. We're talking about people who only know one name for the devil. Commies. It's kind of like the precious little sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade on this side. If you point out that Trump's been running around with Russian oligarchs and mobsters for a couple of decades, the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade We'll say, oh, it's the new McCarthyism. Red baiting. That's my favorite. You can't red bait when there aren't any reds to bait. The government of Russia is not communist. It's not even left. It is right authoritarian. It's one goose step away from Nazism. But that's, I mean, that's why, Robert. James says, stealing? Trump's not stealing. He's just taking it for safekeeping. You commie bastards. Yeah. Mercifully, at 25 minutes past the hour, there's not a whole lot left of our correspondent here.
I don't understand. I really don't understand how you could sell out your country to a bunch of communist pigs. Communist pigs, terrorists running all over. You have more respect for ISIS, Miss Pelosi, and we don't call them terrorists now. We have to call it workplace violence, okay?
Huh? It's not terrorism anymore. It's workplace violence? No. Workplace violence is what happens when a right-wing domestic terrorist here, you know, a Nazi or something, decides to shoot up the workplace. And the only reason we call it workplace violence is because we don't dare call it what it is, Republican right-wing domestic terrorism. Merciful God, there's only 15 seconds left of this.
I mean, you people must sit there and play with yourself, because there's nothing that you have ever accomplished in this world without stealing the money from the American people. So get your fucking article and stick it up your ass. You're a piece of shit.
Yeah, I bet she kisses her children with that mouth. And since this stuff is learned at home, I'll bet her children grow up, you know. Oh, well. So that's tonight's little documentary. Inside the Mind of the Republican Voter. And so, Just remember this woman. I have a feeling you're going to have a hard time forgetting her. But remember this woman. The next time some for-profit media millionaire on television starts talking about how Trump's support is falling like a paralyzed falcon. Not in. These people are going nowhere. These are dead enders. These are the hard cases. And as I said from well before the time of the election, the hard cases comprise fully one-third of the voting public in the United States of America. These are the people who put him in office. All it took was, another... 15% or so, 14% of ordinary Republicans who just couldn't quite bring themselves to vote for, the devil instead of an out-and-out goddamn racist, sexual abuser, grifter. And then all the things that happened on this side. And still, Hillary Clinton got, 3 million more votes. Just in all the wrong places. Thus handing the presidency to Donald Trump by operation of a constitutional institution created to assuage the tender feelings of slave owners. Electoral College. Notice how she worked George Soros in there? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know, Carol. She eats with that mouth. Yeah. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asus is moist loins for the Fuhrer, huh? God damn it, Sister Baker, why did I ever quit drinking? Oh. It's like Carol says. Yeah, plea agreement. So here we are, halfway through this Moran Monday. And I haven't even gotten to where, to that thing that I got to get to, because you won't hear this anywhere else, or at least not to the degree, that I'm going to talk about it. As we go to the break, Barkway says, "Wow, if that lady thinks Trump is the ideal of masculinity, she has bigger problems than just being dumber than a log." I will let Barkway's remarks stand as they are, because anything else would be gilding the lily. Trump, masculine. I'll bet that woman's one of those folks that walks around with a T-shirt that says, "You can grab me by the pussy anytime," or "He can grab me by the right." So let's take a break, and hopefully we will catch it. We'll keep up with fundraising tonight, depending on how you want to look at it. Based on what Harold said, we've either got $200 or $150 to raise this evening. And boy, do we have bills to pay. We really, really, really do. So hopefully we'll stay on track and keep up with where we need to be. Like I said, we'll take a break, and then I'm going to come back with the story that probably means the most to me, at least, this evening. And then we'll do some conversation radio. Sound good? I hope it does. This is listener-supported conversation radio. If you would like to hear less fundraising mentions, well, subscribe. I mean, really? A third of a Hershey bar a month? Or a third of a Hershey bar a day? $10 a month? Your fellow contributors and subscribers, would, if you are not one, would sincerely appreciate you considering becoming one and keeping independent, liberal, progressive media on the air. We'll be back. By suggestion, on the horn.
Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night.
you, mister. Told me I got what it takes. She said I'll turn you on sun into something strong. Play the song with the foggy break. And go-kart Mozart was checking out the weather chart to see if it was safe outside. And little early birdie came by in his curly whirly and asked me if I needed a ride. Down, but she never got touched. She's gonna make it to the night. She's gonna make it through the night.
Blindly found. shot down, but you never got touch. It's gonna make it through the night.
Mama always told me not to look into the eyes of the sun, but Mama, that's where the fun is. That, yeah, that was a highly appropriate bumper this evening. Thank you for the suggestion. I was going to go with America's God of the Sun, but that worked out much better. It is Moore and Monday on the Horn, 19 minutes before the hour. And I said that there was a story that was near and dear to my heart. Well, not dear, but most assuredly near. I would be lying if I didn't say this story is infuriating. Or to channel my inner hillbilly, pisses me right off. Y'all recall back in July when I took a few days away that was not a vacation. It was work, believe you me. I came home more tired than when I left. But I did. I took a few days to go to Washington, D.C. and attend attend some meetings of the National Academy of Science regarding their review ordered by the Office of Surface Mining under the Department of the Interior. A review of the extant scientific literature that points to the fact that mountaintop removal coal extraction in central Appalachia is poisoning people, not who work on the sites, they're getting poisoned too, but differently, but poisons innocent people who just happen to live next to where coal companies come along and start blowing up mountains. Well, the evidence is pretty damning. It would be great if we had a lot more research, but the evidence is pretty damning. And the vast majority of the evidence points to the air that people breathe that is filled, as you know, with particulate matter from the massive explosions, the detonations that coal companies use to blow up the mountain and get at the coal beneath the layers of shale and sandstone. Slate, that sort of thing. If you follow me on Facebook I posted, coincidentally, Goddess of Irony and all that. I posted some video a couple of days ago of. What it's like when a blast goes off in Appalachia. And the dust rolls down, blows down, boils down off the site and into communities below it and into the lungs of men, women, and children who have no choice but to breathe it. Now, if you follow me on Facebook, and you want to see things like this when I post them, you need to do more than friend me and follow me. You need to also add on see posts from first. There's a limited number of people you can do that with. And if you make me one of the people whose posts you see first, you'll see things like this when I post them. The video is only a few days old. It's not old video. It's brand new video. I didn't shoot it. It was shot up Clear Fork, down on the Boone-Raleigh County line. And it shows you very plainly what happens after one of these things goes off. And you can see how breathing that filth might not be good for human beings. Well, there's a good bit of science, as we've talked about over the years, pointing to how bad it is for people to breathe this garbage. And as you know, the Obama Administration Office of Surface Mining in the Department of the Interior, at the request of Dr. Rahul Gupta, who oversees public health in this state, committed $1 million to a review by credentialed people who know, who are scientists and know what the hell they're talking about, a review of the scientific literature pointing to the connection between mountaintop removal and the significant, heartbreaking disease rates in the areas where mountaintop removal is practiced. Perpetrated. Well, one of the first things I saw this morning, and by the way, there is another one of those meetings like the one I attended in D.C. is taking place in Kentucky right now. It started today. Opportunity for public comment, that kind of thing. I got up thinking eclipse stuff. Because even though it wasn't going to, we weren't going to get totality here, it was still going to be pretty neat, and it was. But lo and behold, one of the first things I see is a story from the Charleston Gazette by Ken Ward Jr., who, by the way, we continue to ask, what does a guy got to do? What do we got to do to get this guy a Pulitzer Prize of his own? A story by Ken Ward Jr., headlined, Trump's Interior Department Moves to Stop Mountaintop Removal Study. Ken Ward Jr. writes, Trump administration officials have told the National Academy of Sciences to cease all work on a study of the public health risks for people living near mountaintop removal coal mining sites in Appalachia, the Academy said in a statement late this morning. Well, we've known for a while that this regime is hostile to science. But this is outrageous. It doesn't even affect the current budget. The money is already spent. The money was there, the money was allocated, and there was not a goddamn thing the Trump administration could do about it. But they must have gotten wind of the fact that it looked like the scientists were going to say that there is validity to the concern that mountaintop removal poisons people. We know that, but an official statement along those lines is terrifying to the coal industry, which, of course, has its nose right up the nether quarters of Donald Trump and his up theirs. The U.S. Department of Interior's Office of Surface Mining Reclamation and Enforcement said the Academy told the Academy that the move is part of an agency-wide review of grants and agreements in excess of $100,000, saying the examination is a result of the department's changing budget situation. Well, that is, to use a complicated technical term, a lie. There's no changing budget situation. The budget situation may be changing, but this is from another budget. This is spent money. this scares the Trump administration and its partner in crime, the coal industry. And it all starts because a handful of pissed off hillbillies got tired of waiting around for the big greens to come up with a solution year after year after year, decade after decade, finally took matters into our own hands in 2012 and got a bill introduced in the Congress, the first in history, to call for an outright end to mountaintop removal. The Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It's introduced in the current Congress. It was introduced in this Congress at about the same time that this Republican gang of bandits, highwaymen, cut purses, was undoing what was called the Stream Protection Rule, which prevented coal companies from dumping poisonous filth into streams in Appalachia and burying them forever. The AIC Act is based on the same science that was being reviewed by the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Math, NASM. And it was intolerable to the Trump administration. And so the OSM had to concoct this tissue paper thin lie that it had to do with the changing budget situation. Now, what they'd like to do is they'd like to take whatever money's left and maybe dedicate it to, maybe a grant to show that if you blow up enough mountains, it forms the outline of Uncle Sam visible from outer space. Ken Moore Jr. notes that both the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection and the State Bureau of Public Health said that they needed federal assistance in a review of several dozen scientific papers that had linked mountaintop removal to increased risks of birth defects, cancer, and premature death among residents living near large-scale surface coal mines in Appalachia. The Academy responded, saying, "This is an important study, and we stand ready to resume it as soon as the Department of Interior review is completed. We're grateful to our committee members for their dedication to carrying forward with this study." Well, that's great. But I dare predict that once the review is complete, the money will have disappeared, as well as the will on the part of the Trump administration to complete this, because let's be clear about something. The real pisser in all of this, and it is sort of, in a way, it doubles back on the woman who called Mr. Schwartz. They can talk about how much they love Donald Trump till hell freezes over, but the bottom line is, nothing, regardless of anything he might say, he doesn't love them. He doesn't give a tinker's damn about them. And so for all the ballyhoo about how much Trump loves Appalachia, it's hogwash. See, this the science about mountaintop removal doesn't suggest that there is a threat to people who oppose mountaintop removal. from all of this goddamn blasting dust. It suggests that the blasting dust and the coal industry poisons people without regard to whether they support it or not. The blasting dust doesn't affect only tree huggers. It affects people with Friends of Coal signs in their yard as much or more than it does people who would like to preserve the natural beauty of this state and the already compromised health of the people in this state. And so what Donald Trump said through his Interior Secretary, Ryan Zinke, is that he doesn't give a good goddamn how many hillbillies get poisoned. The only thing that matters to him is that his buddies in the coal industry continue to get richer. Because remember, when all these outfits went bankrupt, Alpha, Patriot, outfits like that, they screwed their workers out of their pensions, out of their 401ks, screwed them out of their health care in the bankruptcy proceedings, but then turned around and asked the bankruptcy judge to okay the payment of massive bonuses to their executive class, people who wouldn't know the difference between coal and licorice. Or at least had never been around it physically enough to tell the difference. Well, they know what coal is. Coal is what makes them rich and makes us poor. That's kind of what I meant when I said, wait till the resource curse gets to Afghanistan. They ain't seen nothing yet. Because what we're talking about here is, in fact, the resource curse. West Virginia was filthy with natural resources, and we have been drained dry. Dry of the resources, and near dry of blood. And the money from it continues to perpetuate the wealthy lifestyles of people who made that, who extracted that money 100 years ago. Just like the money from slavery is still circulating in the free market. It's kind of hard to it's impossible to stomach when some godforsaken greedhead like Trump makes a declaration that the health and well-being of people who voted for him doesn't even matter to him. You're not surprised by that, neither am I. And it would be something near impossible to explain it to a West Virginia Trumpanzee. It would be as difficult as if you were trying to explain that to the fool from the anthropology clip in the first part of the program. But even if it's difficult or impossible to explain, that does not affect the reality. Because the bottom line is, as far as the election was concerned, they came out of the people voting for Trump came out of hollers that are fogged daily with blasting dust ultra-fine, fine particulates, who even as we speak have the processes that will later result in cancer growing in their bodies, and who, if they do anything short of saying, well, it's God's will, if they actually question why they've got cancer, even the doc, well, you know, don't know. Except we've got a pretty solid idea why. But the American people can't be allowed to know what that answer is. And yeah, I'm a little bitter. Because who knows? Well, had the Appalachian Community's Health Emergency Campaign been adequately funded, we might be on the way to D.C. right now. Because this deserves a response. This deserves pushback. But we won't be. Because the Appalachian Community's Health Emergency Campaign isn't adequately funded. And frankly, you know, the big greens just aren't that interested anymore. I mean, after all, look at all the people who voted for Trump in West Virginia. Maybe they just deserve it. I read that story by Ken Ward, and I thought about something, and it's several months old now. I thought about something I saw published a while back. In New York Magazine. It was published back in March. And I've still got it saved. Frank Rich. No sympathy for the hillbilly. And it goes into, well, basically it's a long think piece on how awful Appalachian Trump voters are. And I dare say there won't be a lot of sympathy for them here either. But I will only mention that scattered in amongst them are people like me and Agnes, our kids. My friends and colleagues at Coal River Mountain Watch, who I mention every evening, are the bravest, hardest working people I know. And I don't say that as a slogan. I say that because it's true. If you've never done it, you have no idea how much courage it takes to make minimum wage and stand up every day with a big case of don't give a fuck. And stare down a billion-dollar industry that has people in it who would as soon kill you as look at you. You can't know. But that's the reality. There's nobody working in grassroots organizations in Appalachia, making, making Sierra Club money. No way. But just like here at the Horn, the work continues as long as it remains even remotely possible to do the work. So I tweeted Ken Ward's story earlier today. Share it around, please. I'll try to put it on Facebook, too. Don't let this little bit of vile political corruption happen in darkness. Put light on it. Share the story. Share your outrage. Assuming, of course, that you're outraged. It won't always be like this here. One of the hardest things for me over the course of the decades has been watching the change in this state. People who didn't live here don't realize that once upon a time, West Virginia was a reliably Democratic state, B, surprisingly liberal in some aspects of its government, and to the extent that it could work for its people, tried to work for its people. That's all gone now. That's all over. Our government was stolen from us on the backs of Citizens United and dark money and pharmaceutical companies that flooded this state in pills and got a pet lobbyist elected attorney general. But I wanted to devote some time to the story this evening because I had a sneaking suspicion you wouldn't hear about this somewhere else. Seven minutes past the hour, we're either, depending on how you look at it, we're either $150 or $200 away from meeting our fundraising goal for the evening. And I'm as serious as I can be when I say, please, don't let the program end this evening with us in a hole to begin the week. Because in a matter of a couple of days, it could have dire consequences. Okay? Hit the PayPal button. $5, $10, it matters not, as long as we get to that evening's fundraising goal. And if we ever get the $400 subscribers, I won't have to do this anymore. Yay. All right, let's run over and talk to Jim. Hey, Jim.
How are you?
I'm okay. How about you?
Well, I guess a little busy. I sent you some photographs.
I saw those. It's not spring cleaning, but, you know.
It's just necessary. There's so much stuff in here. My God, in heaven. It looks like a shop, but trying to make some order out of chaos. That's about it.
Are you able to do much of that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. A little bit I have help. But, you know, she is quite efficient and basically it's pretty good, very intuitive, fine lady. And I pay her a decent wage, too, let me tell you that.
Good.
It's well above minimum. And, you know, I would not disrespect anybody to do that to somebody else. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
But for minimum wage, it sucks.
You know the value of labor.
I certainly do. And I know the value of what you've been talking about the last 5 or 10 minutes. And it's sad, but, you know, what you say is quite true. I mean, I've lived here for almost 20 years when I was transferred by the federal government. And it has undergone a tremendous, horrendous change in many ways. I mean, the attitudes of the people have changed. A lot of people have left this place. They have completely decamped and gone to North Carolina, other places, Tennessee, Ohio, anywhere they can get a decent wage. And this whole state is filled with little hamlets that are nothing more than they look like, maybe a Hollywood ranch that they use for a movie, deserted. All they need to have is tumbleweed going through the street.
It's about where we are.
I think so.
And the worst part of it, from my perspective, the worst part of it, Jim, is that is the absence of anything for young people.
Well, there is nothing here.
There's no career. You can't. I mean, with all due respect, to the quality and the value of the labor. You can't make a career at a fast food joint.
No, if you have any kind of career at all in this state, you're going to have to be a doctor or a lawyer. That's it.
And
people, or maybe a healthcare professional, like, you know, a nurse practitioner or a resident nurse.
And you know, if you own one of the tourism businesses, okay, if you're an owner there, you can make a pretty nice living.
If you're
a raft guide, or you work,
it's seasonal.
Yeah, it's 7 months out of the year, and then I don't know what you do during the other five, except maybe go hungry.
Well, you basically draw unemployment if you can.
And again, that's not a career.
No, it's not. Not at all. And you know, that's just, it's sad, but that's the way of it.
And in a culture where, I would dare say, I mean, you tell me if you think I'm wrong. In a culture where you've got a whole lot, you got a whole lot of people on pills. You got another group of people who have transitioned downward from pills to heroin and the toxic mix that is.
Yep.
But then you've got relatively high functioning people who smoke pot. Well, those people can't get a job at McDonald's. They can't get a job at the Rippy Mart. They can't get a job at Walmart. Can't get a job at Lowe's. Can't get a job at
drug test.
Because you know, 28 days before, they may have taken a hit off a doobie.
Mm-hmm. Or it could be something else that's not even related to marijuana.
No, but I'm talking about the pot smokers in particular.
Well, I'm talking about anybody. You know, those drug tests could be particularly,
But what I'm getting at is you've got people who could be useful and productive in a job, but, you know, there's no way to prove with pot that you're high at the moment or you were high 28 days ago. It's just, oh, there's THC in your piss.
Well, the only thing you could do is just, if you want to pass that drug test, is just refrain and not do it.
Yeah.
Because it's not cocaine. And that's exactly what you need to do. I mean, when I worked at the Meps here, we had some soldiers who were that stupid to, when they would do unannounced random drug testing, shit, some of them would pop hot for cocaine. And then wondering, crying the beer while they were getting put out, separated.
That's pretty damn dumb.
Well, I just, they didn't get a whole lot of sympathy from me. Sure as hell didn't, because a bunch of them came to me and asked, you know, what I could do. I said, I can't help you. And I said, you know, that was just absolutely stupid. I said, if there's any way that you could throw yourself on the mercy of UCMJ as a first-time offender, maybe, I don't know.
But the larger issue is the question of what becomes of this place. Steve in New York just sent me a note. He said, I mentioned the Frank Rich article from March. He said, I get what Frank Rich says. I understand that lack of sympathy. However, here's the deal. I have family that I don't speak with and frankly don't like that well. I would never want harm to come to them. As much as the West Virginia Trumpansies or any Trumpansies may piss me off or disgust me, they are my fellow countrymen, hell, my fellow human beings. As a citizen of the world, I think the fact that I am human and hillbillies are human compels me to care about their and your well-being. And that's, you know, that's a sadly rare attitude. But Jim, let's be clear. These, and I don't even like saying these people, but how else do you say it, do not make a point of attempting to endear themselves to anyone. They're like
you
this.
Mean the people who sympathize?
The Trump people.
Oh, no.
I mean, there wasn't much endearing in that voicemail that I played during the program.
Oh God, you mean from the Jersey Devil?
Yeah.
That's exactly who she is. Listen, let me tell you something. I don't mean to contest what the people who say from Philadelphia. That's out of the Pine Barrens, sweetheart.
You say that with real authority.
I know. I've seen those people. You forget I used to spend summers in New York, and we used to go to New Jersey. And I can remember some woman sounded just like this woman. And she was all upset with somebody, and she was saying, "I didn't have to be just bumps. And it sounded just like her. And I've also heard John Waters has used some guy who sounds just like her, except he's male, to announce some of the stuff in his films, characters and stuff. And he's from Jersey. So, I mean, you know, there it is.
I thought John Waters was from the Baltimore area.
That's it, but he imports his talent. He does. By the way, I saw this on Facebook from a friend of mine in San Francisco, and they had completely torn down Robert E. Lee's statue, and in place of it, there was a big statue of Divine. And that dress of hers that she wore in Pink Flamingos.
Oh, my God. Do you remember the naked statues of Donald Trump that went up around inauguration time?
No.
Well, good for you. They were a horror to behold. That overhanging belly and, well, never mind. Doughy ass and, you know, all sort of painted a non-human sort of orange complexion. And there were pictures of the police taking them away after they'd been set up. And a quote about, you know, how... Trump is right. It's terrible when statues are torn down and our history is taken from us. But those are probably statues he was glad to see gone.
Trump, yeah. Well, you know, Trump initially, you know, I think he supported all that. I heard Jesse Jackson this morning talking about how Trump used to be this, used to be that, used to help out with real space and all kinds of stuff. And then Jesse Jackson said, well, you know, it all changed for some reason. He got started on this birtherism stuff and never came off of it. So he just made a reference to Trump's transitioning from someone who had been helpful to the racial cause of black people and just didn't give a shit anymore. Of course, I see what Trump could do when he moved over into Manhattan and how many people he made miserable. And how many, you know, in other places in the boroughs. And, you know, people who have lived in these places for years. You know, immigrants or people, Italians, you know, Little Italy, Chinatown, you know, places where basically in Puerto Rico called New Yorkers. Anyway, he would go in and just buy these buildings up and kick these people out. Upgrade, and if you couldn't pay the rent, bye-bye. So his son-in-law had a very good teacher, not only from his father, but also from his father-in-law. So, you know, that's Trump. And so this kind of a sad situation, not only for West Virginia. Well, it's really sad because these people up here think he's really going to be their salvation. They really think so.
When there's every reason to believe he may damned well be their demise, Jim.
Well, exactly. He wants to take away their health care. He wants to take away everything, all their entitlements. He wants to completely ruin them. And as far as he is concerned, they can just die. He made all these things. He didn't want to leave anybody in the street. Well, I guess not. What he wants to do is to clear the street so his limousine can go by, and he can stack up the fatalities like cordwood. You know, kind of like they did in these movies you've seen about the French Revolution, when these carriages would ride by, and a little street orphan or waif would be run over, and, you know, some bewigged French nobleman would toss a gold piece out of his carriage from A Tale of Two Cities, this is a film I'm thinking about, and just say, you know, why can't you people take care of your own children?
Yeah, and we've heard that. We've heard that around here from the pro-lifers. Why they won't be having them children when they can't take care of them?
Well, I mean, you know, well, I mean, that's true. I mean, you know, there's a certain modicum of truth to that, because, I mean, you shouldn't be having children you can't take care of. You should not. I mean, you know, you can. There are ways to prevent that. Because what are you doing? You're bringing an innocent human being into the world, which you cannot educate, you cannot support, you can't even feed, just because you want to have sex. And they need to really exercise very judiciously every element of birth control they possibly can. I mean, to me,
that becomes an issue of access.
Well, sure it does. I mean, you've got these people around here, some of these right-wing whomever, Christians, Catholics, or whatever, and they just consider that a sin. And, you know, they just, they've had pharmacists who won't prescribe medications that will contribute to birth control. And, you know, that's just the way it is. And these people can't be touched. So basically what they do, they simply allow these folks to go on and, you know, oh, baby, let's dance. I left my rubber in the other pants. You know, boom, boom. There you go. 9 months later, it's bam, bam. And you have another human being on this face of this earth who has no means of support, nothing. And it's very sad. It really is.
And it's, you know, here in West Virginia, and I condemn myself for thinking this way. Agnes and I have had conversations about this. I don't like it, but I look at, our kids are grown now, and so I look at the new generation of little kids wandering around, walking up and down the streets in our little town,
mm-hmm.
And sometimes in my darker moments, I'll look at Agnes and I'll start pointing to them and I'll say, doomed, 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 doomed. Doomed, doomed, because that's what the odds are, Jim.
Their only means of exit from this state, if they are physically able and mentally capable of making a rash judgment about the use of any kind of drug, they can go into the service, and that has been a great employer for a lot of people. And it has really removed a lot of people from poverty. And, you know, it might not be the way you want to go, but at least if they could pass those drug tests and keep...
Well, yeah, pass the drug test, serve honorably, don't get killed, and take advantage, and it ain't always easy, take advantage of the educational opportunities presented.
Mm-hmm.
But every one of those is a hurdle, Jim, not a hop.
Well, that's what it's supposed to be. They're supposed to be a hurdle. That's exactly what it's there for. I mean, you know, it's something that you earn. You earn by honorable service, and you earn by doing your job and obeying your commander, and, you know, that's what it's about. The military is by no means any form of democracy. They may protect it, so they say, but they don't practice it. And they will make, you know, these things aren't the hurdles you think about. The Montgomery, the GI Bill, and stuff like student loan, and also the tuition assistance programs. They are there for those people who have the balls to and the desire to use them. Now, I used to manage some of these programs, and I know exactly what I'm talking about. But that's one means of access and exit from what you consider to be a hopeless situation.
Yeah.
I talked to a guy the other day, and he was a pretty nice fellow and had a lot of sense. And he told me he was he was trying to go to work for Homeland Security. It was asking me some questions about the SF-86, you know, the security clearance, and what it entailed. He told me more than I do because when I filled mine out, it was just one page, but it had a lot on that one page. The rest was done in the field by other people who were trying to check up and see if you lied or not. But he told me that, and I don't know if it's true or not, he's made a statement that he was filling his out by computer, and it was over 160 pages long, which I think is an exaggeration. But, I mean, you know, maybe say times have changed if I had to have one adjudicated. But nonetheless, you know, they're going to find out what's going on. And if you can pass that, and I guess, well, to some people it might be a hurdle. To others, it might not be such a bad hurdle.
And there, you know, there's another term for it too, Jim. When we talk about people, you know, from economically distressed areas, whether they be part of a city or out in the country like here, it's called the poverty draft. And, you know, there's a significant portion of our military made up by that. And you know, here once again, I guess tonight, in about, 34 minutes or so, we're going to find out that we're going to send another 3,600 or 4,000 or 5,000, God knows what, into the fool's errand, and I think you agree with me on this, the fool's errand that is Afghanistan.
Yes, you don't really, with any good sense or intentions, waste manpower. You don't do that. That is just crazy. And we have done nothing. We have been involved in the Afghan war longer than any war we've ever had in our lives. And that's exactly what it is. It's a war.
It's the longest war in American history.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, Vietnam lasted, what, really effectively from 65 to 75?
Yeah.
65 is when it really
started to get going.
And
we have been at this come
13
what,
years.
Yeah, come September, 16 years.
16?
Yeah.
Hell, I lost count.
Because we started Afghanistan before we started Iraq. We started bombing
a number over there.
Yeah, we started bombing Afghanistan in the months immediately following the attacks of September 11th.
Yeah, we did.
And then escalated. But Jim, it's been a great conversation. I wish you well in your let's call it redecorating attempts. Redeployment. How's that? Redeployment. Redeployment of your assets.
Yeah, that's it. You got it. Redeployment of assets and realignment of certain things that we need to do because, like I say, it's just got too much for me in here. Of course, I was absent for 7 months. I was sick.
But I don't think more stuff got brought in those 7 months, Jim.
No, it just got dirtier and dirtier and dirtier, and something had to be done. And, you know, it's being done. And, you know, it's a step in the right direction. It keeps me busy. It keeps me occupied. And it helps keep somebody else employed. And I think it's a good thing. You know, it's a positive step.
Indeed.
I just wish that, you know, I were able to help other people. But I'm not. I'm just not. Because I have too many things that have happened to me. Let me put it this way. I just thank God for insurance. Because
yeah.
The people who don't have it, they are really in bad shape. They really are.
Yes, indeed. Well, Jim, you take care
well,
and have yourself
you
a good
care.
Evening.
And I hope you do, too. And like I say...
My best to Rufus. That's a fine-looking cat.
Well, he's right here, and he says to tell you hello. He's in the exact same spot he was when I took his picture.
Yeah.
And he's looking
doing,
extremely
yeah,
regal.
Doing his best regal sphinx impression.
That's it. You got it. That's Rufus.
If he starts asking riddles, it's time to go, Jim.
He has.
Although you know, I can imagine his would be more along the lines of, do you have Prince Albert in a can? But never mind.
There you go. And except that you have more Friskies in the can, because I can guarantee you one thing, when he's hungry, well, he's not going to take no for an answer.
You take care, Jim. Have a good evening.
And same to you, sir.
Bye now.
Take care. Bye.
30 minutes left in the program. That's our buddy Jim calling from not too far from here. We have a challenge on the table, courtesy of Jug of Punch in the chat room. Let's have a nifty 250. Jug of Punch says, I will match the next 50 bucks that come in. The horn will have two nifty 50s. Let me know after it's been met. So, 30 minutes. And that will take us down, thanks to Alma. That'll take us down significantly toward the $200 we need to raise every evening. If we get those 250s and then 120, that'll leave 80 because Harold said he wants the last to be first and the first to be last. He wants that counted in on the last program of the month and the first program of the month. So we can do it that way. A couple of emails and then back to the phones. Matt in San Francisco, subject line, dumb and dumber. I have worked in large organizations my entire adult life. Inevitably, there are always a handful of stupid people who basically screw stuff up and bitch about progress. It's the one constant theme I have seen throughout. Smart organizations figure out a way to either contain them so they do as little damage as possible, or fire them so everyone else can get on with the business at hand. Never have I been part of an organization that enables the idiots and then puts a bunch of them at the top to make decisions that affect everyone. I say never, but for clarity, I should say never until November 8th, 2016. Problem is, many people will have their lives cut short by the decisions made by the top dolt. And that's a fact. But by the same token, one wonders if it will be sufficient. And I don't even want to use a word like sufficient. Let's put it this way. It won't affect the outcome in 2020. Because I remain firmly convinced that if 30% or more, 32, 33, 35, 37, whatever percent of the American people are essentially on the same page as the woman whose voicemail I played, and I think they are, then a sufficient number can be garnered out of the regular Republican ranks, no matter how badly they despise him, once whoever the Democratic nominee is has been sufficiently demonized through a ferocious, filthy campaign fueled by Citizens United money, dark money, and that sort of thing. So, that. What else? Robert in Australia, in regard to the Afghanistan war. To date, the Afghan war has cost the lives of approximately 2,386 American soldiers. I've read that the war in Afghanistan has cost or will cost somewhere between $4 and $6 trillion. And this is the part of the program where we ask, for what? To keep China from going in and getting its hands on a bunch of rare earth elements? That certainly seems to be where it is now. We're not... Oh, well, we're going to stop the spread of terror. Bullshit! The beating heart of terrorism isn't Afghanistan now. It's metastasized. And that is a, and that's a separate inquiry. Yeah. So we've just thrown away, pissed down a rat hole. You know, sorry, I'm not trying to take anything away from the sacrifice of people who died or were wounded, or otherwise had their lives irretrievably altered by being sent there. But goddamn, for what? And here in about 25 minutes, we're going to be told that whatever it's for, well, we need to do it some more. It's never going to be any different. It is not winnable. You cannot win in Iraq. And I feel filthy just even saying this, but short of killing every human being, I'm sorry, I said Iraq, short of killing every human being in Afghanistan, which was something approaching a military tactic in the ancient world. You know, you go in, you kill a bunch of people, you gather up everybody else, you sell them off into slavery, and you repopulate it with people you can trust. Short of doing that, nothing is going to make Afghanistan stable. Certainly not the United States. There you go. Please don't take my remarks the wrong way. I'm not advocating that. I'm advocating getting the hell out. Because, as I've said before, if the Pottery Barn is in effect, you know, you break it, you buy it. Well, you buy it. The Pottery Barn rule, which doesn't even exist, but was made up by Colin Powell, the Pottery Barn rule says you break it, you buy it. It doesn't say that you then get to pay to sit on the floor and try to put the piece of pottery back together again, because it's pretty clear by virtue of the fact that you broke it that you're not competent to fix it. But that's me. So with 24 minutes left in the program, we've got a $50 challenge on the table, courtesy of Jug of Punch. Again, I implore you, please don't let that go by. Please. We've got to keep up with fundraising, or things are going to fall apart pretty quick. Let's go talk to John in Central PA. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob.
What's up?
Not a whole lot. Just sitting here looking at these stories or these reports about this campaign rally that he's supposed to do tomorrow in Phoenix. And, you know, here we go again, man, you know.
And the mayor of Phoenix has said, please, let's not do this. Not right now.
Yep.
Tensions are too high.
And you know, this is a nighttime rally, right? Apparently, that's what I saw.
Oh, yeah, maybe there'll be tiki torches. Maybe it can be another tiki putsch.
Was it you or Malloy who said that when he starts holding rallies at night, Nuremberg style, that we should really, really be prepared?
Oh, that was Malloy. That was Malloy, and he's absolutely right.
You know, the people that stand by this guy, they got to be brainwashed. They're brainwashed, man. That's what they are.
They're angry, and they just want to see some shit broken.
Right. So you're basically saying that they're kind of like almost like anarchist types.
No, because I think if you're talking about black bloc types, they're a pain in the ass, but they actually think about stuff. These people
right.
don't think. They have just been fed a steady diet of nationalist, populist bigotry and hate. And, you know, when she talks about you CEOs in that clip, well, what she means by that is Jews, okay? And
yeah.
I've been warning against this for years. All the talk about the Federal Reserve, all the talk about Wall Street, all the talk about the bankers and the globalists, those are nothing more than reworked terms out of the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, okay? The Jewish
yep.
world banking conspiracy. And now we're seeing that I was right, and this shit is beginning to bubble to the surface at the tip of the spear, which is the Nazis and the Klansmen. But there's a lot more spear behind
that.
Them, John.
Dude, you know what's crazy? The other day, I was listening to one of the archives from way back, right around the time of the election and right after. Actually, it was today. I'm sorry, it was today. I listened to the 14th of November, just because, you know, I at work, I need things to listen to, and you know, I like hearing your take on everything, and I didn't know about the program before the election, so I'm into this kind of this little kick about listening to some of your
oh wow, jump in the Wayback Machine and go listen to some of the stuff from 2005 and 6 and 7 and 8.
What I'm going to do. That's my next task. But you know, you said in this one episode that I actually listened to today, you said that these fuckers are going to be on the march. It was like I heard you say that, and I just like, holy shit, he was right, you know, like exactly right. The way you said it, what you said was going to happen, you're like, and they're violent, and they're going to cause violence. And I'm just thinking, holy shit, how, if he could have known how right he was when you said that.
I did.
You know, and
no offense, right, but I did know how right I was. Because I know who, right, these, I know who these bastards are.
Yeah, you live around it, so do I. You know, I live... Look, you know, I mean, if you saw me on the street, you'd probably think to yourself, there's a Trump pansy, because I do look like some like a conservative wing nut. You know, I you know,
you got to. Hey, look, I joke about living behind the cornpone curtain. OK, I don't go around here with my Save the Venezuelan Vestal Virgins T-shirt on. OK,
right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, look, I'm pretty pro-gun guy. You know, I'm very progressive, man. Don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not crazy about it like these wing nuts are. I don't go around with a freaking, semi-auto rifle
You live in a semi-rural part of Pennsylvania, which, for all intents and purposes, is very similar to West Virginia, and you have grown up in a culture where you understand the difference between a hunting gun and
right.
a human killing gun.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and you know, and I carry a 45 around. Not always, not everywhere I go. Just I do it just because me and guys that I know are really, you know, like we'll go and have a bonfire and we'll sit there and we'll take our clips out and we'll pass around our guns and everybody be like, oh shit, I like this.
Well, you know, it beats the hell out of giving each other mutual hand jobs, but I'm sorry. I'm being facetious, but that's part of this culture.
Yeah,
and,
it is.
And there's,
it's
and there's a big difference,
man, you know.
I mean, if you lived in New York City, you would have a completely different understanding of firearms than you do where you are, John. Because
absolutely.
Because in a place like New York or Chicago or Boston or Atlanta or Nashville or you know, any city, the presentation of a firearm 99% of the time means bad things are happening. Because there aren't a whole lot of people putting on 30-man deer drives on the Boston fucking Commons, okay?
Yeah.
And that's not me gooning on people in cities. I'm not. I'm trying to point out that there are points of understanding. Would this country be better off without the Second Amendment? Probably so. But there's a lot of things this country would be better off without. And... You can see from the whole business of taking down monuments to fucking treason that clearing those things is a lot different from the intellectual discussion of what we would be better off without.
Absolutely right.
So, you know, I draw a big distinction between, and I'm not saying that people in rural areas are better or worse than... But if you're living in downtown DC and you've got an arsenal of rifles and shotguns, your attitudes are probably different about your guns than the guy who's than the guy who's out the holler here, who has a .30-06, a .270, a .223. A 220 Swift, a 12 gauge, a 10 gauge, a 16 gauge, you know, one for ducks, one for turkey, one for geese.
10 gauge. Holy shit.
You've never seen a goose gun?
Yeah, I think, my step grandfather had one of those. I wouldn't dare to freaking shoot it, though, man.
Oh, you better be braced up when you do.
I was about to say, I like my shoulder being in location.
But a goose is a big damn bird, and a 12-gauge won't sometimes get the job done. You know, it's a matter of the tool you choose.
Yeah.
And I'm probably going to get some emails for being, you know, not a real progressive over that. But it's just one of those things, okay? I don't have any guns. I've had them. I don't have them, okay?
You seem to know a lot about guns, man.
Well,
because of where you grew up, I'm sure.
I mean, I didn't grow up around guns. I learned about them. I was around them tangentially as a kid, but fortunately always around them. But I was a kid before the NRA became a militarized organization, okay?
Yeah. Yep.
And, you know, I mean, I fulfilled my PE requirement in college by taking marksmanship. You know, and I got a mercy I got a mercy C in it, okay? I'm a terrible shot.
I'm not very good.
I have a natural shake that I have had since I was born. And,
oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
And, you know, even with a bench rest, the rifle is still moving. But anyway, those,
it's not
you know,
as easy as people think either. But
well, no, it's not.
Well, I've you know, like living around here, I've seen how radical people have become, you know, and how like today at work, a guy was saying a bunch of pro-Trump stuff to me today, and had no idea that I hate that fucking bastard. Not the guy I work with, but the guy, but Trump. He has no idea I hate him. And, you know, and I don't really bother to say, hey, I don't fucking like the guy, you know, get the fuck away from me, you know, because I just, I feel that there's no, I don't like confrontation, and I feel that there's no point in it, no point in it at all with these people. But, you know, they think that everybody loves Trump, and that anybody who doesn't is crazy, is a fucking, you know, the demonization of liberals and liberalism I've never seen on any level before either, too. And that's what proves to me that, I mean, this shit is very, very serious. All of it. It's very serious. This should not be taken lightly. Like, this, you know, I was just complaining to my dad. I was like, you know, it really scares me seeing Trump doing these rallies like this, like it's Nazi Germany. And, you know, my dad made this off the cuff, like, I guess, joke and said, well, it really scares me that this refrigerator is too full and I can't put something in it. You know what I mean? Like, just kind of made light of it. And I just, that pissed me off so much. I'm just thinking to myself, like, you have no idea what's coming, do you? You know? I tried to warn everybody about this kind of shit that's going on with this shit, what happened in Charlottesville and what's happening with Trump and what he's doing to this country. But he's tearing this country right in half, man. I mean, he is destroying the country. People like that audio that you played earlier from Tony Schwartz's, that was on Tony Schwartz's answer machine or something.
Yeah.
That right there was full of propaganda and lies. That's coming from the right-wing hate filth machine. And it's really surprising to see all the people that buy into it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the thing is, I couldn't even figure out. You can't even sort them. It would be at the level of a doctoral thesis just to take those 6 minutes and pull each one of those little pieces of white-wing propagandistic bullshit out and say, well, and say, well, this came from Lightfart. This came from Stormfront. This came from because it all did. And, you know, some of it I'm sure came from Fox. I got a story. You know, you being in Pennsylvania and all, you have to speak, you have to answer for the state of Pennsylvania right now.
Okay. I'll be the Pennsylvania's progressive representative for the horn right now.
So,
are
you familiar with a little community called Union City?
Never heard of it.
Big state, of course. It's a few miles east of I-79 as I-79 goes up toward Erie, not too awful far from the lake.
Okay, that's real far away from here. Okay, gotcha.
And it's probably 15, 20 miles from the New York line.
Yeah, that's a good 6-hour drive from where I'm at.
Yeah, like I said, big state. You know, usually it's one of those questions you can ask and win a beer in a bar. You can say, what's the biggest state east of the Mississippi? It's real simple. What's the biggest state?
Is it really?
No. You can say, what's the biggest state east of the Mississippi in terms of square miles? And most people will say Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. But it ain't, though, right?
And they're wrong. It's Georgia.
Florida?
Georgia.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Georgia's huge.
Okay.
But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So a little high school group goes from Union City, Pennsylvania, on a bus down to visit down to visit Washington, D.C. And there are some little little blonde white high school girls, and they put on their Trump T-shirts and their MAGA hats, And guess where they went? Totally by accident. Didn't mean to. Didn't plan it at all. Guess where they went?
In D.C.?
Howard University. The historically black university in Washington, D.C. Referred to lovingly by students and alums as the Mecca. Because of its long history of educating African-American students. Howard exists because good, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, white universities didn't want to let black folks, go to college. So it really is a fantastic institution of higher learning with an absolutely breathtaking alumni list. So lo and behold, two little 16-year-old white girls put on their MAGA hats that they'd bought the day before and just happened to wander onto the campus of Howard University and just happened to wander into the cafeteria to stand in the lunch line. I shit you not.
Oh, my God. They're...
And in their MAGA hats and their Trump T-shirts, they were not well received.
Well, doesn't that kind of worry you that young women like that, our youth, is supporting this guy like that?
You're the one that lives in Pennsylvania. Are you surprised?
I mean, I guess not really. It's only two, I hope.
Well, no, there were more than that, but these two particular, they were immediately ready with their white grievance. The high school students said Howard students approached them and criticized their Trump gear as they waited in line at the cafeteria, with one Howard student grabbing their hats and another saying "fuck y'all."
Serves them right.
The two white students from Union City High School in Pennsylvania told BuzzFeed News they were among a group of 30 teenagers on an organized trip to see sites in Washington, D.C., where the college is based. They arrived at the campus around lunchtime and headed for the cafeteria with their school chaperones. Here's one of the interesting parts. The sightseeing they were scheduled to do did not include the campus of Howard University.
Right, so they wandered off.
No, they went trolling, John.
Yes. Yep.
Allie Vandy. They took their white grievance and they went trolling with it.
I was just thinking that right as you said that.
I mean, that's wearing a Make America Great Again hat onto the campus of Howard University. They might as well have gone onto the campus of Howard University's with pillowcases over their heads. Or maybe gotten a cap that says 88 on it and, gone to visit the Holocaust Museum.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. The fact that, this is what their part, Bill Maher made a point a couple of weeks ago, his point was that the Republican Party is the troll party. You know what I mean? Everything about
that's all this was trolling. Allie Vandy, age 16, was one of the students wearing a MAGA hat and a Trump T-shirt. She complained about the incident on Twitter soon after leaving campus. "We were not even through the front door to get through the cafeteria, and a man, a black man, had walked through and took my friend Sarah's hat right off her head. We were getting dirty looks and were completely harassed by these Howard students." Jesus Christ, these two sound like they have got to be members of the Tommy Lauren fan club.
Yep. Oh yeah. Yep. I don't understand what right wingism, why that's so attracted to young people. You know what I mean? Granted, I still think they're in the minority, but it's a trend I'm seeing.
The people who got prohibition passed in the United States were a minority too, but there were enough of them that all they had to do was swing a much smaller percentage to their side and bang, win. Okay?
Yep.
And they are. When you, I don't anticipate seeing that Trump's approval numbers are going to drop below 33-32%. And that's how many of the voting public in this country support him. And that means that all you've got to do, if you're the RNC, all you've got to do is bring in another 15%, and you can get that just by with sleazy ads alone, and boom, he's in office for another 4 years. And boom, 2018, nothing happens to you. But
yeah,
you know,
we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, but you know, meanwhile, over here on our side, we've got people, I'll never vote for like one of those corporate Democrats, Bob. No. When the definition of corporate Democrat is anything I don't like.
Well, some of these purity faction, the people of the purity faction on the supposed left, have rendered themselves unwitting tools for the right wing machine. For example, there's a YouTuber, and you can go look him up and everything, and he's an affiliate of TYT, and I really liked him during the Bernie primary, but during the general election, he really got on my nerves because he spent a lot of time, going after Hillary Clinton and the Democrats, which of course they deserve to get to have scrutiny,
but after the convention's over, you realize you're dealing with a duality, whether you like it or not. And you act accordingly.
Exactly. And, well, this guy, he has a big following, too. He's got like 500,000 subscribers last time I checked. He did a video the other day sticking up for neo-Nazis' free speech. And then
who is
video,
this?
Secular Talk.
Oh, God. Yeah, I've heard of that guy. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
And then he did a video about Hillary Clinton is turning to religion after her loss. And he's going on and on about, about religion and Hillary Clinton, like bashing the shit out of Hillary Clinton for her religious affiliation. I'm just thinking to myself, wait a minute here, dude. You just stuck up for the First Amendment.
I got a clip, and we got to get out of here, but I got a clip from a Sparkle Pony the other day who said, Bob, I would gladly vote for this progressive Republican over any corporate Democrat.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, there's the progressive Republican.
Yeah, running for Congress in Arkansas. He's a preacher, okay? And the hard-hitting Johnny-on-the-spot reporter who was interviewing him at Netroots Nation did everything but give the guy a hand job, but never asked him about never asked him about a woman's right to choose.
Oh, yeah, we know what the answer is on that, too.
Sure we do. So these purity types would sell out a woman's right to choose in the name of some sort of never-to-be-attained purity that ain't going to happen anyway.
Yep.
And call anybody who doesn't agree with them goddamn establishment shill.
Yep.
You know, it reminds me of what Casey Stengel said when he was manager of the 62 Mets. At one point, he looked at him and says, does anybody here know how to play this game? Yeah, because the 62 Mets were just abysmally bad.
Uh-oh.
but really, you look over here at the Purity Brigade and you're like, does anybody here know how to play this game? Because, see, I may not have a womb. I may not have fallopian tubes and ovaries and stuff. But that does not keep me from being able to say ungoddamned equivocally that a woman's constitutional right to manage the workings of her own reproductive system is non-negotiable.
Right.
If you can't say that you support a woman's right to choose, fuck you. Okay, so maybe I'm engaging in the same kind of purity they are, but I think mine's got a little bit more of a history behind it and a little bit more legitimacy.
Well, I think a lot of them agree with you, too. A lot of them. But you're right. It's probably the last thing on their minds, though. They wouldn't even think that the guys – see, most of these priority people are basically goth dudes, white dudes that are privileged. You know what I mean? That's a lot of them are white guys.
Yeah, and you know what? If you can sell out a woman's right to choose in the name of some so-called liberal progressive Republican who complains about money in politics, fuck you.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I don't mean you, John, but I mean, yeah.
Oh, I know.
But we got to get out of here. We got to get out of here, unfortunately. But it's been a good conversation.
I'll probably talk to you probably Friday then, too, on the, from the front porch. So.
Okay, sounds good. We'll be here. Take care, John.
Yep, see you, Bob.
Bye now. So we come to the close of the program. $50 challenge on the table. $180 left to raise. Thank you, Alma. Thank you, Harold. I'm not counting your 50 because you said first and last. So I'm trying to do this right. But a $50 challenge on the table, courtesy of Jug of Punch. $100 to go beyond, or $80 to go beyond that to keep even. And I'm not kidding. We can't get in these holes. We can't. Thank you very kindly, everybody. Thanks to all of you who do support the program. Thanks to our subscribers. Thank you to our nightly contributors. Thank you to the people who provide challenges. Thank you to everyone who shares your precious, finite time in participating in this little conversation, however you do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Hope you enjoyed the eclipse there, Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.